Hi, I'm Naomi. I'm 37 and a new mum. And when I was on the fence about becoming a parent, all I heard was, your life will have new meaning with a child. Now I've got a baby though, it's, oh, you think your house is cluttered with the masses upon masses upon masses of baby stuff? Oh, you just wait. Now, despite deciding to baby, there's still loads more to find out from both camps. So here's a podcast on the Secret Recordings Network where I chat to baby wanters, baby rejecters and everything in between to see why we decide to baby or not to baby. In this episode, I chat to Kat, who suffered postpartum psychosis.
I ended up being admitted into a general acute psychiatric ward, and I can remember saying to the nurse, please don't let me out of here because I'm worried what I'm going to do if I get out of here.
And I'm joined on this journey by my sister and best friend, Camilla.
Here I am.
Are you feeling slightly apprehensive about this episode? Because I am.
Yeah.
I actually feel like even just talking about it, knowing what is about to come, is making like tears prick up in my eyes.
Yeah, I'm trying not to like think too deeply about it before we enter
now,
it.
we'll get to it shortly, but I do want to talk to you because I feel like it's kind of relevant to this about emotional overload of becoming a parent. Because I know that like everyone talks about the fourth trimester, so kind of like the first 12 weeks of baby's life, and your hormones are all over the place and you'll feel very emotional and you'll have these high highs and low lows, and that's kind of like the normal roller coaster of parenthood. But genuinely, even now, Eleni is 6 months old and my emotions feel so much more intense and raw than I've ever known them feel before.
Yeah.
Do you think that you had that with Chester?
Yeah, I think, to be honest, I just think being a parent full stop can make your emotions feel more raw. And because you have to keep it together for this little person, I wouldn't even say it's just the first 6 months. I would, to be honest, who knows how long this may last.
No, but do you know what? That's interesting, actually. You say that about keeping it together, because one of my friends who will remain nameless said to me, quotes, motherhood is basically just loads of suppressed rage. And when she said it, I was like, oh my God, yes. I feel like that, but you feel like you can't say that out loud to anyone. And I think that's what makes it so hard, is it's the struggle of feeling. So last night, the last three nights, Eleni will not go to bed at night. She has always been so good at going to bed. Like we've never had massive issues with putting her down to bed and her really kicking off and being upset about it. The last three nights, she has ended up back downstairs with us watching Married at First Sight Australia. And honestly, it's made me lose my mind, because in my head, that's my one tiny window of not being responsible for another thing. That first bit where she goes down to bed is where I sit and have some dinner and have a glass of wine, and I just sit and I watch naff TV and switch off. And so because she won't go to bed, I've not had the switch off. And last night I was the anger and rage that I felt, not at her, but just at the situation, was so bad that I said to Dan, I was like, I can't be here. I can't be in the house. I can't be in the house. And I had to go for a walk, and I went for a 20-minute walk, and I was literally walking around the streets, like silently crying. And then this man walked up past me and he went, oh, look at how lovely the moon looks tonight. No wonder it's so bright out here. Look how lovely the moon looks. And it really kind of snapped me out of it. Thank you, nice man, for letting me know about how lovely the moon looks, because I hadn't even noticed it.
Really similar to, and I think we mentioned this on the podcast before, me having an angry walk and someone in their garden singing, I think it was La Bamba. These people were sent for us.
Yeah, so true.
This is where I think sometimes groups and other people are like the best thing, because you can let it out to some other mums, and they might have had just as bad a day or worse, and they've had similar feelings. I think this is where the honesty about how you're feeling is so important, because actually there are so many other people that feel that same way.
Exactly. And after I'd been for my stroll, I messaged my antenatal WhatsApp group and they were there with all the love and support that I needed. So you're absolutely right. Yeah. Now, going into the conversation with Kat, I think we need to be clear that this conversation comes with trigger warnings. So there is in-depth discussion around suicidal thoughts. There is a discussion around a suicide attempt. So I want to make that very clear going into it, that please go in knowing that that's going to happen. And if that is something you are comfortable listening to. Genuinely, I think this conversation with Kat is probably the interview from the podcast that has, it's properly got me deep to my core. Mm. And I think it's one of the most important conversations that I have had. So I really hope that you can listen to it because I think it is an important conversation that needs to be heard. But just so we're clear, there is talk of suicidal thoughts and a suicide attempt. So from this point on, please just check in as to whether you are comfortable dealing with that.
My name's Kat and I am a mum of two. I have a little boy called Barnaby who is three and a little girl, Flo, who is six.
Amazing. And the reason you are on this podcast, Kat, is thanks to your friend, Rachel Hardy.
Yes.
Who listens to To Baby or Not To Baby. And she sent me a message saying, I think you should get my friend on. And she wrote something in her last message to me, which I feel like sums it up perfectly.
I'm worried about this.
We're all a bit mental. She just has the paperwork to prove it. To be fair, in her first message to me, when I'd said, like, I'd put a post out on Instagram saying, you know, what kind of interviews do you want to hear in season three? Like, what would you like? And your friend sent a message saying, the crazy mum, you should interview my friend.
Yes, that is me.
Do you know what? How do you feel, though, about that? Because I was like, do you find that insulting? Obviously, we'll get to the reason why she said that.
I suppose it's very individual, isn't it? For me, I use humour quite a lot to deal with things that happen in life. And really, if I didn't laugh about what had happened over the past few years, it would just bring me down so much. And it's actually really refreshing to have a friend like Rachel. It means that we can be really open with each other and talk about things and, you know, talk about when we're having good times and when we're having bad times. So deal with that experience with humour.
So do you want to explain why Rachel refers to you as, quote, the crazy mum?
Yeah, okay. So how long have you got? After I'd had my little boy Barnaby, who's the younger out of the two, I became progressively unwell. And when he was about 6 months old, I was admitted into an acute psychiatric ward because I had come to a point of crisis with postnatal depression and some psychotic visions, hallucinations, auditory hallucinations, and I was no longer safe to be at home. And after they transferred me from the acute psychiatric ward, I got transferred into a mother and baby unit, which is a unit that aims to keep mums and babies together when they're postnatally and antenatally actually having real difficulties with their mental health. And I found myself sectioned for 6 months. The section lasts for, but I wasn't in hospital for that long. I was in hospital for about 3 months, I think, in the end.
As a new mum, everything is amplified, I think.
Yeah.
And yet what you had was amplification upon amplification.
Yeah.
So the easiest thing to do is probably explain how this all kind of started and when it maybe felt like, I hate using the term normal, but in inverted commas, when it went from kind of normal post-baby concerns, worries, stresses, feeling a bit crappy to actually this is more than that.
Yeah. It was sort of maybe a month or two, I think, after Barney was born, that I changed his nappy. And as I have learned since, quite often what happens is little boys get erections. And this is what happened when I changed his nappy. And I began to feel that I had caused this, and then ended up in this sort of spiral of thoughts, trying to work out whether, if I had caused it, am I a paedophile? Had I somehow enjoyed that moment? All really kind of horrific thoughts that were kind of going through my mind. So I guess that added energy that I was using just progressively made me more and more tired, which made me less able to cope with these, what they call intrusive thoughts coming in. And the intrusive thoughts kind of morph and change. So you think you've got hold of one theme and then it turns into something else. And my themes were very much about causing harm to the children dying, somehow me hurting them. I had these really vivid visions of me dropping Barnaby onto a really hard floor and his head cracking open and there's blood seeping out. So yeah, really, really awful thoughts, which I kind of kept to myself. It wasn't really until I realised I was starting to get to a point that I was aware that this wasn't okay, the kind of the thoughts that I was having, and reached out to the perinatal mental health team and my GP, and they kind of swept me up. And it was at that point that I started telling them a little bit more about what I'd been experiencing. But interestingly, I withheld the fact that I'd been having these concerns that I was a paedophile because I was petrified that they were going to take my children away from me.
After you'd had Flo, did you experience any of the same kind of heightened anxieties, if you like, or was that fairly plain sailing?
I would say it was less anxiety with Flo. I did have some postnatal mental health difficulties. It was more a depression, but it wasn't as acute as what I experienced with Barnaby. And I didn't have these anxieties. I didn't have these awful intrusive thoughts with her. And I got better quite quickly with her taking some antidepressants and doing some CBT. So I, you know, when I had Barnaby, because I experienced some difficulties with a previous pregnancy, you know, we made a plan for the pregnancy that I had with Barnaby, bearing in mind that I'd been poorly before. So there was like sort of a bit of safety netting, but I just thought that I wasn't going to be poorly because I knew what to do.
So did the thoughts that you were having just get kind of progressively worse?
Yeah. So it started off with, I've never been great with puke, which is a bit ironic really, because I work in the healthcare sector now. So surrounded by a lot of puke. So it kind of morphed from this fear of vomit to the extreme where I was considering ripping all the carpets up from our house and putting lino down so I could bleach the place. Soft play was hell for me. So it morphed from that kind of illness fear into the me hurting them fear, just real sort of like health anxieties, just generalized anxieties, to the head cracking on the floor, and then this sort of gradual progression of these concerns about being a paedophile kind of ramping up. I think that's what really tipped me over the edge, to be honest, were those thoughts.
So at what point did you, or was it somebody around you that went, hang on, you're not coping here, like something is not right here?
I think my partner was being able to see that things were increasingly getting worse, and he's pretty good to talk to. And when I started telling him about the health anxieties, the fear about vomit, all of that kind of stuff, he started to do a bit of research. And he was a bit like, I think you might have OCD. He's a really like in-depth researcher. Loves an Excel spreadsheet. It's
oh my God,
that's why I'm with him.
I'm literally going, this is my husband. That is exactly the same.
So part of this research that he was doing, he'd kind of found a TV program about OCD, and this young lady came on and said that she gets these thoughts that she worries that she's a paedophile and that she's hurt children and she's done something terrible. She's just got like this overwhelming, awful feeling that that's what's happened. And I was sat there and I was like, oh my God, somebody else thinks this. Like someone else is saying this on TV. And I said to him, this is what is happening to me. Like I have these thoughts. This is exactly what's going on. And I was like, please help me. I don't want to feel like this anymore. Help me. And we got back in touch with the perinatal team. The crisis team came out to see me because I'd got to such a heightened state of anxiety that I couldn't sleep. I was literally sort of rocking because the thoughts were becoming more frequent, more intense. I couldn't shut my eyes. The only way at that point that I felt like I could get out of this situation was to take my own life. I couldn't think of anything else that was going to work. I remember opening the kitchen drawer and like the knives were talking to me. They were saying, come on, you can use us. It'll be easy. Just get this over and done with. I had said to Mark, you need to take the knives. You need to take all of the medication. You need to hide the ropes because we're climbers. You need to hide the ropes and lock it all in the garage and don't let me have any access to it. So he knew that I was feeling that way. And the crisis team came and gave me some medication and I was sort of like, okay, right, somebody's helping me now. By that point, the perinatal team came out to see me and the nurse that came and did a home visit with me was absolutely amazing. And it was at that point that I was able to sort of disclose to a professional the thoughts that I'd been having. I can remember saying, I think you're more unwell than you've been letting on. I think you're really poorly. And she said, how would you feel about coming into hospital? So yeah, that weekend was pretty intense and they upped my diazepam to sort of like knock me out basically. But I woke up in the night one evening and I was like, right, we've got a railway bridge nearby. So tomorrow I'm going to go and chuck myself over this bridge. And he rang the 24-hour crisis line and he rang them. He said, I don't know what to do. I don't feel like I can keep her safe anymore. And they said, you need to bring her into A&E. So bundled me into the car and took me off to A&E. And the people that came to see me said, you can't go home. You need to go into hospital. And obviously they had to try and get me a space on one of these mother and baby units because I was perinatal, postnatal, but you know, there were no beds there for me. So I ended up being admitted into a general acute psychiatric ward. I felt safe there. And I can remember saying to the nurse, please don't let me out of here. Just don't let me out of here. Don't let me go. Cause I'm worried what I'm going to do if I get out of here.
Yeah. And so what then followed the being on this kind of general psychiatric ward? Mm.
So there was a bed that became available in the mother and baby unit in Exeter. So I was transferred and that's where I stayed for a few months. They'd set it up so that it was very family friendly. So if you had any other children, they could come and visit. You had sort of very intense psychology work. You had access to a psychologist straight away and specialist nurses and a psychiatrist and specialist pharmacists. It was just a case of them trying to find the right cocktail of medication that stopped me feeling so terrible. But it took a really long time to get anywhere near, like you say, inverted commas, normal. I kind of did a bit better for a while and then I don't know, I just felt like the bottom fell out of my world and I thought, I just can't do this anymore. And I tried to hang myself. And so they sectioned me after that. They didn't feel like it was safe for me to be an informed patient.
And that was in the hospital?
Mm, yeah. Yeah. And the section, there's different types of sections, and the section that I was put under meant that they could keep me in hospital for up to 6 months.
How much do you remember about the darkest moments?
Yeah, they're pretty clear to me because I've had relapses and stuff since I've been back to that place. So I can remember how I felt, that sort of complete hopelessness. And it, like everybody else, would just be better off if I wasn't here for them to worry about.
And so, thank goodness, you didn't succeed in your attempts. Mm. But what happened?
This is awful. And Barnaby, if you're ever listening to this when you're a grown up, Mummy never meant to do this whilst you were in the room, but I tried to hang myself off of the bars of his cot. Because that was the only place that I could find. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. I was doing so well up until that point.
Sorry.
Oh, God, no, don't be sorry. I said to my husband before I came in, I'm going to go and get some tissue to take with me because I'm worried that I might not make it through without it. I've left the tissue outside. Oh. What a wally. When that happened, did you stop yourself or were you stopped?
No, I stopped myself. It's weird to think that if I'd been successful then, like the last few years wouldn't have happened. I wouldn't have experienced them, which would, yeah, you know, would have been awful.
Yeah, and not only that, the last few years, but also the rest of your life, yeah, and the rest of your children's lives.
Yeah.
Okay, so when did things start to change? When did you start to not want to be looking around and trying to find a way out?
I can't really remember, actually. I just suddenly started to get a bit better, which seems to be the case quite often with these things. It was summer, and I remember they'd organised like a little day out where we went to the beach and we went paddleboarding and ate ice creams and fish and chips and stuff. I remember sort of thinking then, oh, okay, feeling a little bit like coming back to the real world. And also that kind of being a bit of a test as to whether I could cope packing a bag, getting two kids into a car.
Yeah.
I wasn't allowed to drive, but, you know, my partner was there. Yeah, and getting through a day and then getting back again with everybody in one piece, it was quite a good confidence booster. And then I think there were sort of other factors coming into play, sort of little motivators that were like making myself want to get better and get out of hospital, I suppose, really. Like my best friend had a hen do in Ibiza when I was in there. I wasn't allowed to go. And just as we got to the date of her wedding coming up, they sort of said to me, oh, yeah, I think we'll be able to let you out some, well, they call it leave. They said, I think we'll be able to let you have some leave so that you can get to your friend's wedding. So I managed to get to that, which was amazing. And not long after that, they were talking to me about rescinding my section, which means I could have left if I wanted to after that point, and sorting the discharge out for home. It was very gradual. They're really skilled at it. They used to gradually build up, you know, like half a day at home, a night over, a couple of nights over. And then you get to the end where you're allowed a week of leave. And then if you survive that, then you come back and then you're allowed to take your stuff and go. If you want to, of course. If you still needed the support, then obviously you weren't kicked out at that point.
When it got to that point in time, what was the ratio of like excitement and almost kind of trepidation and fear of like, oh my God, am I ready? Am I ready? Is this going to be okay?
Yeah. I think initially I was quite excited to be getting back because I'd passed the exam, I'd got better, a star. It felt really weird coming home. I felt like I was a guest, like I was staying at somebody else's house. I didn't really know what to do. And I'd been out of my daughter's life for a couple of months. So I didn't really know. It was a bit like, what do I do with you? How do you work now? Like, I'd like deferring to my boyfriend for the stuff that he'd been doing with her. And gradually that sort of faded, that guest house feeling. But I was still very tired. It was still a lot to get through the days. And the type of medication that I was on was really zombifying. And most of the time it felt like I had like a suit of armor on. It was like so heavy all of the time. And I thought, God, if this is how medicated I need to be to get through life, I have no idea how I'm going to look after my children, get up, do housework, go out for a walk, meet my friends. You know, am I ever going to be able to exercise again? And I just could not see myself ever being able to do anything more than get up in the morning and then go back to bed in the evening, having not really done a lot in between. So I think I took a bit of a dip then. There was obviously a fear from everybody about changing medication, because it's quite a risk, because you have to wean off one and then wean up to the other one. And then there's that period in between where you've got no real amount of antidepressants or anti-anxiety tablets in you. So that's quite a risky time. But I did manage to get off of those zombifying drugs and onto something slightly more awakening, electrifying, uplifting. I don't know how you'd explain it. Made me more alert anyway. Yeah, and slowly sort of started to be able to do more.
And how was getting back to parenting?
I think it just sort of happened naturally. I do remember there were quite a few blips of me having panic attacks, but they gradually became spaced out and less frequent. I was doing quite a lot of psychology work at that point, and I think that that was really helpful with me dealing with these thoughts. And, you know, children don't give you much respite, so they just kind of expect you to get on with it, really. And essentially, I just did, I suppose, with the support of amazing partner, family and friends, and, you know, the healthcare professionals.
How do you feel as a parent now? Do you have any kind of the worrying thoughts? Do you worry that they're going to come back?
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure that the thoughts will ever go away, to be honest. What I have now is a bit of a toolkit from my psychology work as to how I deal with them. But yeah, generally, I'm well now. I still struggle with whether I'm doing a good enough job as a mum, but got a WhatsApp group. There's too many WhatsApp groups in this world, aren't there? WhatsApp group with all of my schoolmates. And those of us that have children, actually, when we're really honest on that group, as we are able to be, I think we're all feeling the same. So I don't think my levels of worry and concern are, like from a parenting point of view, are particularly abnormal now. And I think it's been quite good for all of us to know that everybody struggles. And if you've got a safe place where you can talk it out, it's really healthy.
I have a WhatsApp group with my antenatal friends, and it is a lifeline.
Yeah.
It is, that group is like therapy.
Yeah.
And if you're having a bad day, there's a bunch of other people telling you it's okay. We've had those bad days as well, but you're going to be all right.
Yeah.
But I think at the root of it, we're all worrying.
Yeah.
Is the truth of the matter.
Yeah. And I suppose the point of concern is when that level of worry starts to impact on daily life and stops you from doing the things that you would normally do. I suppose that's the only measure, the only line in the sand that you've got, really.
I know you've kind of mentioned your partner and your family and the psychologists and the outreach workers and the people who you had around around you, but because I imagine the gratitude that you have for them must be like brimming over.
Yeah, I don't know why Mark's still with me. Like the level of chaos that I have brought to his life is pretty epic. Mark was, I suppose he held it together for quite a long time while I was in hospital. He definitely had a bit of a wibble afterwards. I don't think that that's unreasonable. I think that's probably to be expected and fairly natural.
Yeah.
I think my parents were just worried and didn't really know what to do, what to say. A bit confused, I think, probably about it. It probably came out of the blue a little bit for them, because I've got a wonderful relationship with them, but I've always tried to sort of protect them from my worries. They've got enough of their own stuff going on. You know, it's had an impact on all of us, but there's definitely some positives that have come out of it, having that different perspective on things, a different level of understanding for other people when things don't quite go to plan, more understanding of myself when things don't go to plan. I'm much better now at, you know, when something fucks up, thinking, oh, well, that didn't work.
Yeah. Shit happens.
Yeah. Won't do that again. Friends and colleagues and stuff maybe talk to me about things because I've been quite open about what happened to me. I think maybe they talk to me about stuff a bit more than maybe they would do to other people. And that's only got to be a good thing, that somebody is able to talk more.
100%.
Yeah.
Do you have any regrets about becoming a parent? Because I was going to say, I imagine this stuff would not have happened to you had you not become a parent, although maybe it would, I don't
know. Yeah, I guess we'll never know that. But my gut tells me that it probably wouldn't have happened had I not had children. And again, kids, if you're listening to this in a few years' time, I love you to bits and there are so many wonderful times that I spend with you. But yeah, there have been points when I've thought, what the fuck have I done? This was a huge mistake, absolutely huge. And not just because of it affecting me, but landed my boyfriend, you know, I've brought him into the situation, and then these poor children have been brought into it with absolutely no say on the matter whatsoever. So yeah, like if I'm brutally honest, there are times and days where I just think I shouldn't have done this. I should not have done this. But luckily, the biggest lesson it has taught me, along with my boyfriend, who's very often annoyingly right, is that you don't need to do a lot with children. They just want you. They just want your attention and your love. And some of the really wonderful golden moments that I've had recently have been just packing a picnic, and we've got a camper van, driving the camper van, I don't know, like half an hour away from where we live to various different nice places, and sitting in the camper van and eating a picnic and then going home again. A while back, I would have thought, oh, that's not good enough. It's really boring. It doesn't like stimulate them enough. But it's been wonderful. And because they're happy, we're happy. So the real simple moments like that are the things that make it worth it.
Don't you? Oh, God, honestly, I'm going to cry. And I swear, I feel like I've cried so many times about this interview and during the interview and then listening back to the interview and there. But I am so grateful to Kat for talking to us about it and hearing about the little campervan picnics, which are such a simple, lovely pleasure after everything that she's been through. I'm like, oh my God, that is like heaven on a plate.
What she deserves.
Yeah, absolutely.
What she deserves. Like, and thank goodness she's having those golden moments and nothing more terrible happened. It's absolutely petrifying what our minds and bodies can do to us.
Yeah, it really is. And I think about Kat all the time. like my lowest of low days, like those moments where I feel like I haven't got a handle on things and I can't cope, are a bloody drop in the ocean compared to what she went through. And I think that's why it hit me so hard, this interview. Like I said to you, Mill, I was really like, are you okay? Are you going to be okay to listen to this interview with Kat? Because obviously you're pregnant at the minute and you're about to have your second baby.
Yeah.
So how did it make you feel listening to it?
Well, and also obviously with my kind of mental health history as well, like I say, it's petrifying. But I did actually have, after I listened to it, I had like a really good conversation with Ed about it as well, and sort of said to him, I think the key really is when you're first having these thoughts to not be afraid to at least tell someone, like even if it's him, because locking those thoughts away and letting them fester can make you so much more poorly, can't it? But I also get what she was saying about, God, if I say to someone that I'm thinking I'm a paedophile, they're going to take my kids away. Because I totally get that. But gosh, to have those overwhelming thoughts in your mind.
But don't you think as well, thank goodness that her partner found that documentary about those other people that had the same thing to finally...
Yes, because that is what gave her the opportunity to actually say what she's saying.
Yes.
I was in a shop after I'd done a suicide awareness course and I'd taken my folder from the course with me and I was paying for whatever it was and I'd put the folder on the side. It was a young lad and he looked at it and it had several statements about suicide and he said to me, that's how I feel. And we ended up having like a slightly longer conversation and I gave him a number for Samaritans and something else. But I thought about him so much afterwards, but I thought, yeah, sometimes that's what people need, isn't it? They can't say it out loud. So someone else needs to say it for them and then they can go, yeah, that's me too.
Yeah, exactly. Now I did, after I'd done the interview with Kat, I did message her and say, are there any kind of links or groups or, you know, if somebody has listened to this interview and thinks, oh my God, that's how I feel. There are brilliant resources. So her main thing she said was contact your GP and find out if there's a perinatal mental health team.
Which there's so many more now.
Yeah.
This is like got bigger and bigger, especially in the last couple of years.
Absolutely. And also checking local support groups on Facebook or just Googling them. But there's also something called Action on Postpartum Psychosis, which is app-network.org. And then obviously the NHS website has got loads of stuff around postnatal depression, and Mind as well has a lot of good info around kind of perinatal mental health stuff. So Action on Postpartum Psychosis is app-network.org. And then obviously just Google Mind or NHS. But crucially, if you are feeling any of the things that you've heard Kat talk about, please, please talk to someone and please, please get help. Follow my journey and tell us about your own on social media. We are at To Baby or Not. If you rate and review this podcast, not only will it really help us out, but it will mean that your life will be filled with campervan picnics and all those other deliciously lovely simple things.
Next time on To Baby or Not To Baby.
In a way, me freezing my eggs is me taking an active step towards being able to still have the future that I've always wanted, even if I'm not currently in that position right now.